Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I hope you were with me last week. Why, I would suffer atrial fibrillation if it came to my attention that you had missed the event leadership puzzle. From Fundraising Day 2013, our panel solved the puzzle for honorees, chairs, hosts, and committees. From goal setting and recruitment to motivation and thanks. And back to board basics. Gene Takagi, our legal contributor, was here. He talked about who belongs on your board and for how long. Should your CEO be on the board? Is it okay if your CEO chairs? What about vendors? Gene and I differed on vendors, actually, so I shut off his mic. He's the principal of Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group in San Francisco, and we're going to continue that conversation in a couple of weeks, very shortly. This week, out of the blue, fermentation fascination. This is a brand new feature this week. We're going to bring in people who have unusual and interesting jobs and in some way support nonprofits. And our inaugural out-of-the-blue guest is Sandor Katz. He's a fermenter. He calls himself Sandor Kraut. We're going to talk about the history, the benefits, and the methods of fermenting foods. And Sandor is going to share his simple sauerkraut recipe. Cool. And volunteer matchmaking. Scott Kegler is our monthly technology contributor and the editor of Nonprofit Technology News. This month, we're talking about tech that matches willing volunteers with seeking charities. Between the guests on Tony's Take Two, my nonprofit bootcamp interview. I'm really excited to introduce our first out-of-the-blue guest. Sandor Elix Katz is a fermentation revivalist. Newsweek called his first book, Wild Fermentation, the Fermenting Bible. The New York Times said that he has become, for fermentation, what Timothy Leary was for psychedelic drugs, a charismatic, we'll see about that, I hope so, consciousness-raising thinker and advocate who wants people to see the world in a new way, end quote. His latest book, The Art of Fermentation, received a James Beard Award, and you'll find him in rural Tennessee, as well as wildfermentation.com. Sandor Katz, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
It's a real pleasure. I'm really, people say I'm excited to introduce, but I am excited because you're our first out-of-the-blue guest, and I think fermentation is a fascinating thing. We're going to learn a lot more about it. So I am excited that you're on the show. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks. Me too.
How did you get into fermentation, Sandor?
Well, let's see. I grew up in New York City, and for reasons I couldn't possibly explain, one of my favorite foods as a kid was sour pickles, garlic dill fermented pickles. So I've always been drawn to some of the flavors of fermentation. But what really got me to begin practicing fermentation is 20 years ago when I moved from New York City to rural Tennessee and started keeping a garden. There was just a moment when there was a whole row of cabbages ready, and I decided to learn how to make sauerkraut, based on this sort of practical dilemma. What do I do with all these veggies that are ready at the same time? And then one thing led to another. I started exploring all sorts of realms of fermentation. I started making yogurt and a little bit of cheese. I started doing some bread making using a sourdough. I started making wines out of elderberries and blueberries and other kinds of berries. And, I just got kind of obsessed with fermentation and, spent a decade indulging that obsession and learning about it. Really everybody loves fermented foods and beverages.
Cool.
If you walk into a gourmet food store, most of what you see are products of fermentation. And they are just part of, people's lives in all parts of the world.
In lots of ways that I think we don't recognize. The other reason that I'm excited today is because our creative producer, Claire Meyerhoff, is in the studio with me from North Carolina. Hi, Claire. Welcome.
Hi, Tony. How are you today?
It's a pleasure.
Great.
It's a privilege to have you. So I'm excited that Sandor is our first out-of-the-blue guest, and I'm excited that longtime creative producer from the beginning, this is not new, Claire Meyerhoff is with me in the studio. So
I helped Tony with his very first show.
That's very true.
I helped him ferment the show.
That's very good. So it has come. Yeah. Oh, you have a question for Sandor?
I do have a question for you. In your first remarks, you said something about that you started practicing fermenting, and I that caught my attention because it's like saying you practice yoga. You don't do yoga. You practice it. So tell me a little bit about the practice of fermenting.
What I mean by that is that, you know, for my entire life, since I've been, you know, eating food, I've been eating products of fermentation, and everybody does. You couldn't possibly not. If you eat bread, you're eating something that's fermented. If you're eating cheese, you're eating something that's fermented. You know, if you're putting any kind of condiment on your sandwich, well, that's based on something that's fermented. Vinegar, if it's not directly fermented itself, like soy sauce or fish sauce. But, you know, really what I'm saying is that, you know, fermentation is everywhere. Everybody eats products of fermentation every day. Until 75 years ago, it was just part of what people did in every community. It was part of producing food, was fermenting some of it. But as food production has, you know, disappeared from the fabric of our lives, fermentation has disappeared with it, but at the same time, we've developed this fear of bacteria. So people assume that, you know, fermentation is, you know, potentially dangerous or highly technical. So for me, that's the significant thing. That's the moment that's significant in my story, is when I began a practice of fermentation, doing it for myself.
Well, and there is a bit of a meditative quality to it, because you have to let it sit, and you have to kind of think about it. It doesn't happen right away. It's not like stir frying.
Exactly. There's always a time component. You always have to wait, whether it's a few hours, a few days, a few weeks, or in certain cases, a few years.
Fermentation. Can I get a word in, Claire?
I don't know. You brought me into the studio.
I know it.
You get what you wish for.
I got screwed. Fermentation goes back. There's records of fermentation in archaeology, right? We're going back thousands of years.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, the earliest archaeological evidence that we currently have goes back 9,000 years. But, you know, of course, you know, foods and microorganisms, you know, don't leave lots of traces. It's the pottery is the traces. So, you know, we can surmise that the desire for vessels for fermentation was the incentive for figuring out pottery, and that people have been practicing fermentation for longer than we've had pottery vessels. But yes, for at least thousands of years. And I would point out, it's just a natural biological phenomenon that happens without us. So, you know, I think that our primate ancestors were to some degree familiar with fermentation.
My niece's husband, they live in Vermont, and he's a scientist. He spends his whole day doing scientific research. But his hobby is pickling things. And if you open any closet in their house, you see these jars with different vegetables in there, and they're pickling. Do you see this as like a new trend for millennials?
Well, I mean, I mean, I would say that people have always pickled things. You know, people who've had gardens have always had a reason to pickle things, to put things up. And the word pickling covers a lot of ground. You know, most contemporary pickles involve just pouring hot vinegar over vegetables and essentially sterilizing them in the jar. But you can also pickle things, like a sauerkraut or kimchi could be called a pickle. The kosher dills that I grew up loving are pickles, and those are basically just vegetables in a saltwater brine, where fermentation creates lactic acid that preserves the vegetables. So all the, you know, microbial activity is very sort of present and alive in those styles of pickles.
And fermentation is going on in our bodies too, isn't it, Sandor?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the cells of our bodies are capable of fermentation, and when we sort of call upon particular muscles to do more work than we're providing them oxygen for, they revert to this fermentative mode of metabolism, where they produce lactic acid as a byproduct, and that's the source of the feeling of a muscle burn. You know, also women's bodies actually produce a carbohydrate, a glycogen, that supports a population of lactic acid bacteria that creates an acidic environment that facilitates human reproduction.
Ooh,
in our intestines, there's a huge amount of fermentation going on. So in a number of different ways, you know, in our bodies, there's lots of fermentation.
That's exciting. I love that, and I have felt that when I'm working out, you feel that burning pain in your legs after a run. That's lactic acid. You're saying.
Yeah, that's lactic acid. That's basically, you know, the you know, incredible sort of ingenuity and flexibility of our bodies. If we're not giving them enough oxygen for the oxidative mode, they have this other mode of energy production, the fermentative mode.
Outstanding. All right, we're going to take a break. We got to go away for a couple seconds. Claire Meyerhoff stays with us. Sandor Kraut stays with us, and I hope that you do too.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you need a business plan that can guide your company's growth? Covenant 7 will help bring the changes you need. We are small business consultants, and we pay attention to the details you may miss. Our coaching and consulting services are guaranteed to lead to right growth for your business. Call us at 917-833-4860 for a no-obligation free consultation. Check out our website at www.covenant7.com.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Every way you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neo-Sage. Tuesday nights, 9 to 11, New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. I can't send live listener love or podcast pleasantries today. I'm sorry. We're not live. We're recording a couple days in advance. So, but live listener love to the people who I bet are out there. California is always checking in. North Carolina, Texas, New York. Washington and Oregon have been checking in. And of course, I can send podcast pleasantries to everybody listening to the podcast, especially our friends in Germany. Lots of podcast listeners in Germany, like over 1,000. Sandor, you mentioned a early love of garlic pickles. You prefer those over the non-garlic crunchier kind?
My favorite kind are with garlic and dill, and right now in my garden I have an explosion of cucumbers, and so I'm seeing some garlic dill pickles in my near future.
You'll be meditating about those, as Claire said. So for people who have an excess of cabbage, this could also be very valuable, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, any vegetable can be fermented, using pretty similar techniques. The classic is definitely fermented cabbage, sauerkraut, but you can add, different vegetables together. Often I'll add carrots to the sauerkraut, but it's a really very versatile process.
And we want to establish your bona fides for being on the show. You do work with local nonprofits in Western Tennessee, don't you?
For my whole life, I've been involved in different kinds of nonprofits. When I still lived in New York, I worked for some nonprofits. I did some fundraising. you know, now my involvement is much more, let's say, casual and peripheral. But yeah, no, I think it's important to, you know, sort of support you know, local charitable organizations and people doing good works.
What was the occasion for your move from New York City to Western Tennessee? That's a pretty big move.
Well, actually, it's not Western Tennessee; it's Middle Tennessee where I live.
Okay.
I mean, basically, it was a moment when I was ready to make a big change in my life, and you know, I met some people who were part of a community here, and I was very intrigued by the stories they told, and decided to come visit and check out what they were doing, and. I don't know. I mean, as much as anything, just the idea of, you know, moving to a rural environment, getting involved in keeping a garden, you know, drinking fresh spring water, you know, those things were very appealing to me. So, yeah, it was a big change of life moving from, you know, Manhattan to a rural county with you know, maybe 10,000 people in it.
My wife recently started her first garden. She no longer lives in New York City. She moved to a suburb of Indianapolis. And she has this beautiful garden. It's probably, I don't know, 40 or maybe even 50 feet, maybe 40 feet long and about 20 feet wide with lots of different varieties of lettuce and varieties of peppers. Broccoli didn't do so well this year. But she sent me a picture of her just so proudly sitting at the garden with little young sprouts. So like all the sprouts were like 2 or 3 inches, but the first time. And she just looks so pleased with herself in that little picture. It's lovely.
Well, I mean, it's very gratifying, you know, to grow food, and it puts you in touch with, you know, the land and the sort of incredible potential of these seeds, and, you know, puts you in this sort of nurturing role, and it's very empowering because, you know, this, you know, really limited amount of work you're doing is producing all this wonderful fresh food, and you can just, you know, taste and feel how, you know, how healthy it is to eat such fresh food, and it's incredibly fun and rewarding.
Outstanding. Claire, do you have a garden?
And, you know, I mean, people do it all over. I mean, you know, I'm in touch with people in New York who are involved in, you know, urban community gardens, rooftop gardens. I mean, I think that, you know, lots of people everywhere are getting more interested in gardening and producing their own food, you know, and supporting local farmers. I think, you know, all these things are interconnected.
Do you have a garden, Claire?
I think the extent of my gardening is pretty much I'll buy one of those basil plants or something and keep it on my windowsill and pluck from it. And
all right. I see that in the city.
And then that's nice. That's a lot fresher than any basil you
exactly.
could possibly
that's
buy.
That's right. And you know that it doesn't have herbicides and fungicides and pesticides in your in its little pot, right?
Yes. I think an herb garden is a good way to garden for the botanically challenged like myself.
Oh. Sandor, you have a sauerkraut recipe that's really simple that I want you to share with us, please.
Okay, sure. So I will tell you the short version, and let me tell you that if you look on my website, wildfermentation.com, you can find a much more sort of fleshed out version of it if you need more details. I always recommend fermenting vegetables as, you know, the best way to sort of make a first step into fermentation. It's a great gateway into fermentation.
Okay.
Because you don't need any special equipment. You don't need any special starter cultures. You know, it's really absolutely intrinsically safe. There's never been a documented case of food poisoning from fermented vegetables in the United States. You see results relatively quickly, and it's incredibly delicious and healthy. You take some cabbage and chop it up. You can augment it with other vegetables, carrots, turnips, other root vegetables, onions, garlic, you know, almost any vegetable you could imagine. Just chop it up and then lightly salt it. You know, don't get caught up on a sort of magic number of how much salt you need to use. Lightly salt it, taste it, make sure it tastes good to you. You can always add more salt if you like. It's easier to add salt than it is to subtract salt. And then take your shredded salted vegetables in a bowl and just spend 5 minutes with your hands just squeezing them. And what this does is it kind of bruises the vegetables, breaks down some cell walls. Our objective here is to get the vegetables submerged under their own juices. And by squeezing them, you make them juicy. So it's easy when you stuff them into a jar to press them down and have their juices rise up over them. Then once your vegetables are nice and juicy, you take a jar. A wide mouth jar is easier than a narrow necked jar. You could certainly use a beautiful ceramic crock if you have one, but a jar is something simple that everybody has. A quart jar will take about 2 pounds of vegetables to fill. And then you just stuff the vegetables into the jar and use some force and expel any air pockets. And as you press the vegetables down, you will see liquid rising up over them. And then you just leave it for a few days. I like to leave it right on my kitchen counter where I'll see it, because if you seal the jar, there's going to be all this carbon dioxide that's produced, and it'll create some pressure. And it's okay to seal the jar, but you got to be sure every day or so to release the pressure.
Okay.
Now, you know, the big question with fermentation is, when is it ready? You know, when do I eat it? How do I know that it's ready? And there's just no straightforward answer to that question. I mean, if you were, doing this on a homestead with a cellar, you would probably make enough to get you through the winter, and it would be fermenting for months and months. And some people like it best after several months, but you really can start to eat it after just a couple of days. The acids are forming. There's dense populations of probiotic bacteria. The texture's changing. So what I recommend that people do is just taste it every 2 or 3 days, eat a little bit of it, and then press it down, make sure it gets submerged under the juices again. And then you get to see a progression of flavors. And, you know, do you like it more and more as it gets more acidic? Or did you like it best after, 4 days, and then it started to get too strong for you? The beautiful thing about fermenting yourself, like making anything for yourself, is you can figure out how you like it and make it the way you like it. So many people prefer a milder kraut that's fermented for a shorter period of time than what they've typically been exposed to. You can make it spicy. You could make it not spicy. You could ferment it for weeks and weeks, or just for a few days. There's a lot of possibilities once you understand, the basic process, which is that simple. You know, chop, okay, salt, squeeze, stuff it in a jar, and wait a few days.
What are some of the spices you could add, if you, besides the salt?
Well, I mean, some classic spicing ideas would be caraway seeds, juniper berries. In the Korean tradition of kimchi, it would be hot chili peppers and garlic and ginger and shallots or onions. But people are doing a lot of non-traditional vegetable fermentation these days, and I've had some excellent curry krauts that have, turmeric and, other curry spices in them. You could certainly do a dill-flavored kraut. You can incorporate fruits. That's very popular in Eastern Europe. Cranberries or little bits of other kinds of fruits in with the sauerkraut. There's really infinite possibilities, and your imagination is really the only limitation.
All right. You mentioned earlier among all the foods that are fermenting or fermented that we're not aware of, chocolate. How is that a fermentation product?
Well, chocolate and also coffee are fermented on the harvesting end. So this happens in the tropical places where cacao and coffee grow. With cacao, it's the pods after they're harvested, are mounded and moistened with water to facilitate a spontaneous fermentation, and this both digests the fibers that hold the cacao beans into the pods, and it also helps develop the flavor that we associate with chocolate. And similarly, coffee, it's the beans right when they're harvested are mounded on the ground, moistened, and allowed to spontaneously ferment, and that's part of the flavor development.
Hmm. Tell me something else about fermentation that I haven't asked you. What else would you like to share about it?
Well, I mean, I think that one thing that's really on people's minds a lot today is this idea of probiotics and a growing awareness of how important bacteria are in our bodies, and yet because of antibiotic drugs, antibacterial cleansing products, chlorinated water, we have quite a bit of chemical exposure that subjects the bacteria in our bodies to assault. So people are turning to supplements of probiotics, and just thinking about how to replenish and diversify their bacterial populations in the gut. And I would say that really there's no better way to do this than with fermented foods. But you have to understand that not all fermented foods contain live bacterial cultures. A cup of coffee does not contain live bacterial cultures. A loaf of bread that's been baked does not contain live bacterial cultures. It's really those ferments that have not been cooked after their fermentation. So yogurt is the classic example of a live culture food.
Mm-hmm.
But sauerkraut, provided it hasn't been canned, is another one.
What about beer? Is that a fermenting process?
Oh, absolutely.
Beer, wine,
sake, all alcoholic beverages are products of fermentation. Absolutely. Now, in terms of the live bacterial cultures that I was talking about, in the natural world, microorganisms do not exist singularly. You never find a single type of microorganism. So historically, alcoholic beverages have always also had lactic acid bacteria as well as yeast. But really what Louis Pasteur's achievement that sort of spawned the field of microbiology was isolating a single organism, yeast. In any supermarket you can buy a packet of pure yeast.
Right.
So most commercial beers and wines are made with just pure yeast and don't have other bacteria in with them.
Sandor, what is it? We have to wrap up in just a couple minutes. What is it that you love about doing this work?
Well, really, I mean, what got me interested in teaching and speaking about fermentation is just demystifying it. I mean, fermentation is just such an important part of everybody's life. I mean, only because, so many of the foods that are central to every culinary tradition, all around the world involve fermentation. And yet because fermentation has largely disappeared from our families and our households and our communities and disappeared behind factory doors, people have become very intimidated by it. We're taught to be afraid of bacteria and microorganisms, and so there's just all of this fear. And with a food as simple and safe as sauerkraut, everybody's terrified. How can I be sure I'm getting good bacteria growing and not bad bacteria? We've just been taught to have so much fear about bacteria. So I'm interested in empowering people and helping people learn how to do this with confidence and do it safely and effectively.
Sandor Alex Katz, Sandor Kraut. He's a fermentation revivalist. And you will find him at wildfermentation.com. Sandor, thank you very much for being our inaugural Out of the Blue guest. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Tony. Well, it's a pleasure to be on your show, Out of the Blue.
Thanks very much. Bye, Sandor.
Bye-bye.
We go away for a couple seconds, and when we come back, it's Tony's Take Two, and then volunteer matchmaking with Scott Kegler, and, of course, Claire Meyerhoff still here. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
A
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hi, I'm Austin Marola.
And I'm Sloan Wainwright.
We're the hosts of the new Thursday morning show, The Music
Power, Power Hour.
At 11 a.m.
We're going to have fun.
And shine the light on all aspects of music.
And its limitless healing possibilities.
We're going to invite artists to share their songs and play live.
We'll be listening and talking about great music from yesterday to today.
So you're invited to share in our musical conversation.
Your ears will be delighted with the sound of music.
And our voices. Join Austin.
And Sloan.
Live Thursdays at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
If you have big ideas and an average budget, tune into the way above average Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. I do. I'm Jonah Halper from Next Gen Charity.
Hi there. This week's Tony's Take Two is what I blogged about this week, which is my nonprofit boot camp interview. Jamie Bristow Lavoy from Nonprofit Match One, the number one.com, put together a series of interviews with consultants and some other people. And I was one of them in this nonprofit boot camp. Another one was Bob Penna, who's the author of the Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox. And he's been a guest on this show. So you can hear the two of us in any case. And about five other people were interviewed for the boot camp. And I talked about the importance and the timeliness of planned giving and charity registration. And my thanks to Jamie Bristow Lavoy at nonprofitmatch1.com for including me. And also, we have a couple of minutes. I want to ask Claire Meyerhoff. Claire, aside from being creative producer of this show, which is more than a full-time job, but she's able to squeeze in being a principal of the Planned Giving Agency, which is marketing and communications for planned giving programs. What's happening in planned giving marketing communications?
Well, I think that a lot of savvy clients these days are taking like a different look at their planned giving marketing. Maybe they've been at it for a few years. They have a website. They've been doing some mailings and things like that. But I've found that some clients are asking me like, well, what else can we do? What's something kind of different? So I'll help them come up with a little project. I always call it like a special project. And it's about basically finding a group of niche donors that you might have that you've been kind of ignoring. And how can you drill down your list of your millions of donors down to a group of maybe like, I don't know, maybe 200.
Mm-hmm.
So narrow your audience to about 200 people and then ask them to do something for you. Send them a letter and ask them some questions maybe. Try to get some little bit of content out of them. But basically what you're trying to do is engage them and see what level of interest they have in your organization. So a little special letter maybe to a small group of people.
Now, if you don't have a list of a million, which a lot of our listeners won't, if you have a list of 1,000, you can still ask 20 or 25 people, can't you?
Exactly, because it's about starting a conversation. The best plan giving people out there that have really, you know, robust plan giving programs, big universities and things, right? So what's their job as a plan giving officer? Their job is mostly to try to get conversations with people. So their goal is to identify someone that will sit down and actually have a conversation with them about how they're supporting the organization, what their future plans might be. Are we in your will? For how much are we in your will? So the goal is always to have a conversation with an individual. So if you don't have a big plan giving department and a plan giving officer, wouldn't it be nice to sort of identify a small group of people and have a conversation with them? Start the conversation that helps you identify who these really loyal, really interested people are.
Thank you.
And letters. A lot of people these days are hiring me to write letters for them.
Direct mail still does very well,
doesn't it? Direct mail and and again, more specific letters. One letter I just did for an organization was very clean. They had wanted to send out a big fat bequest letter to a bunch of people and say like, oh, it's very important you give us bequests for these reasons and we do this and we do that. And I got them to ditch that and to instead just send a letter from an existing plan giving donor, a guy who says, you know, a year ago I did the best thing I ever did. I put this organization in my will. Have you?
A story.
If you have.
Tells you a story.
Not even a story. Just the fact that someone did it, and have you done it too?
Yeah.
And to see if people will respond to that letter and say, yeah, I've done it. So before you try to explain to people a whole bunch of stuff or tell them a big story, why don't you just find out if they've just plain old put you in their will already?
Okay.
Simple letters.
My first guest, I think, for Tony's Take Two. I don't think I've ever had somebody else come in to and give insight for on Tony's Take Two.
It's so, Take Two Two.
Thank you, Claire.
Take Two Two.
Take double two.
TWOTOO.
Claire Meyerhoff, Plan Giving Agency.
Thank you.
She's staying at. She's not going anywhere.
Oh.
Not that she's going anywhere. But we're going to bring in our monthly technology contributor, Scott Kegler. He's the editor of Nonprofit Technology News, which you will find at nptechnews.com. Scotty Kegler, how you doing?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing terrifically. Thanks for being on the show today. It's good to have you back.
No problem. Yeah.
We're talking about volunteers and matching volunteers. There's a boon in volunteerism. It's critical for charities.
Yeah, obviously, right. I mean, aside from volunteering funds and that kind of thing, time is, you know, a big deal, time and talents. And you're right. I mean, the boom, I was really amazed to read these statistics, and I'll just kind of recap them here. These are from the Corporation for National Community Service. 64.3 million Americans, which equates to about 26.8% of the adult population. Think about that. More than a quarter of the adult population is actually giving of their time for free. I mean, just amazing, especially in these times when, you know, people really, you know, that more than that many people want work, right?
Yeah, right.
And that amounts to almost 8 billion hours worth of service. That's just an amazing number to me. It almost restores my faith in humanity that people actually, you know, do care about the environment and the people around them. So, anyhow.
Yeah, we're a volunteer culture. I mean, we want to help each other.
Right, right.
And
of course, you know, with that kind of numbers becomes the question of what, how do you deal with it? How do you put that together? How do you manage the people that obviously want to do something and match them up with the things that are available to do? It's like social media, right? I mean, you've got a lot of things to do, and how do you actually get to the people that not only are qualified to do it, but that want to do it?
Okay, and that's where the technology is going to help us match the willing volunteers with the charities that are in need. So, and this is also good for employers as well.
Right, right, because when you have employees who are dedicated to the community, probably means a just kind of a better all-around person that is a part of your staff. So that's on the internal side. And then from the external side, I guess PR kind of thing, if you have people that are being helpful to the community, that's exposing your organization, your for-profit organization, as a do-gooder organization as well. So that's always good.
And it makes for loyal and productive employees, because we know that if people want to help and you're giving them, you as the employer, are giving them a way of helping charities, then I think that also leads to productive, happier employees.
Right, and possibly happier and more productive customers. You know, I mean, every company is looking for ways to get customers to do more business with them. And if part of that is, that's the whole point behind social media for profit organizations, is that, you know, get people to like you, interact with them, show them something that is good about the company rather than just all the complaints that inevitably come up. So,
all right, so
you know, just another feather in the cap.
So let's bring this to the technology. You're the
technology,
right. Contributor. Now we know the value of volunteerism all around. What's the technology doing for us?
Well, overall, what it's doing is matching. I mean, if you think about the basic matching stuff, the one that comes to mind probably to most people is Match.com, where you're taking individuals' attributes and interests and talents and all those kind of things, and locations, of course. And you're matching them up with, in terms of Match.com, with other people with the same kinds of interests. It's the same kind of technology. I'm looking at one online right now, is volunteermatch.org.
Yes.
Spelled just like that, volunteermatch.org. And right on the front page here, I just brought it up and it says, what do you care about in, and then it knows where I am, of course, Travelers Rest, South Carolina. So right there, it's helping me to find things that I may like or may want to do in my local area. So the technology here is obviously on the very first part of it is knowing, I'll just get a little bit technical here, Tony. It's tracing my IP address, my internet protocol address, which is the connection between me and the internet. And those things are pretty much location-based. So it knows my location. It knows, in this case, that I'm in Traveler's Rest.
Okay. And
if I were accessing it on my phone, it would actually just use GPS.
Okay. And so, interesting. This is the same technology that Match.com and Christian Mingle and, dating.
Thousands of them. But, yes,
dating
exactly.
Sites.
It's interest and location-based at the very top level.
Okay. So those interests, they're going to match, I guess, your skills with a charity's needs.
Yeah, so let's just do a little experiment here. I'm on this one here. This is volunteermatch.org. And first of all, it knows where I am, but it really doesn't know anything about me because I've never logged in here before.
Okay.
So I'll just say I care about animals. And let's see what it comes up with. Pets and people. The Lutheran Hospice of South Carolina. Volunteer for an exchange student. Pet therapy volunteers. Now that might be one. Pet therapy volunteers, which is a hospice. So, I mean, there it is. Within about, 5 seconds, I found something that might match what I like to do. So I could get my animal, you know, if I got a friendly dog, I could take the dog down to the pet therapy volunteers and help out. So, pretty amazing, actually.
Okay. Now, of course, in Volunteer Match, there's got to be a place, there's a portal, I'm sure, for charities to sign up as well.
Well, yeah, I think, the hospice qualifies as a charity, right?
Right, but I'm saying you entered as an individual, they would enter as they would enter as a charity. And they'd be assuming, you know, I assume they would they'd be putting in what their volunteer needs are, what they're looking for.
Right. Just at the top of this one, again, we'll stick with Volunteer Match. There are two things. One is find opportunities, which is obviously what I did. Right next to it is recruit volunteers. So in that case, let's see, they have volunteers connected since 1988, 7 million. So they've done this a bit.
Okay.
Easy, free to join. So yeah,
so it's free for the charities.
Claire, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
So I would assume, well, I don't know, if it's free, how does this website make money? They have advertisers? Or?
Well, I just scrolled down a bit, and it shows here this is built on the freemium concept, which is you get the basic level for free, which includes recruiting tools, online referrals from corporate partners, tracking and reporting, and a photo manager. Then for $75 for the year, you get this whole bunch of other stuff. So still, at $75, that's not bad.
Okay. Another one that I'm familiar with is catchafire.org. And I know that one because Rachel Chong, who's the CEO, has been a guest. And you'll find my interview with her on the YouTube channel, realtonymartinetti.com. Look for Catch a Fire or Rachel Chong. Young woman and very vibrant, and but doing the same type of work that that we're talking about. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll wrap this up. But also, I neglected to mention earlier, Scott is going to inaugurate another new feature. He's going to recommend bottles of wine. He's an enophile, and that I don't think that qualifies for jargon jail, because I think people know what enophile is. Scott's an enophile, and each month he's going to, as a wine connoisseur, he's going to recommend a bottle of wine, $20 or under. So stay with us for all of that.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Scott, what else do you want to leave us with around this volunteer matching between charities and the willing volunteers?
There's plenty of websites out there. The technology is available, and I think that if an organization is not really utilizing their volunteers, it's probably a matter of not trying, because obviously people want to volunteer. They want to give their time and talents, and they're really looking for just the right place to put it. So advice, just go do it. Find one of these websites that is free or inexpensive, sign up for it, and put it out there and see how it works, because apparently it is working for a lot of places.
You have another, there's one that's also mentioned in the article at nptechnews.com. Besides, so we talked about volunteermatch.org, catchafire.org. You have another one or two?
Disasterready.org is the one that's mentioned in there, and so that one is another one of these. And what they do is they specialize in having things pre-readied for disasters, and it's specialized for those kind of things. And they're how to get mobilized, how to find people, how to put things together before things happen. So it's well intentioned, and it looks like they do a great job. Although I don't have any personal experience with them.
Okay, and is Disaster Ready also for individuals who want to gain skills for disaster?
I think it is. I know that it's put together by Cornerstone On Demand Foundation, and so they do a lot of these kinds of getting ready kinds of things. They've got Food for the Hungry, America Cares. They've got a whole bunch of these, and I'm not really sure which one of these is does what for which organizations, but it's another one of those that's worth taking a look at if you're a nonprofit looking for ways to make the best out of your best efforts with your volunteers.
Okay, well, let's move to your other expertise. Claire told me on the break that enophile actually does qualify for jargon jail. So I guess I should
define... Yeah, what's an eno? I mean, what's an eno, Tony?
All right. Well, first, I think, well, we want to spell it. It starts with an O, O-E-N-O-P-H-I-L-E, enophile. And Claire would know who belongs in jargon jail, because Claire, you created jargon jail.
I created jargon jail. I branded jargon jail, and I came up with the term jargon jail. And I don't think this qualifies for jargon jail, because it qualifies more for, like, just words you don't know, jail.
Right.
Okay. Well, that doesn't sound as fun as jargon jail, though. All right.
No, it's sort of just like vocabulary vestibule.
Okay. Another alliterationist. All right. All right, Scott. So you're going to, each time you come on, you're going to recommend a bottle of wine that's $20 or under. What do you have for this month?
I have one. This is actually one of my very favorites. And Tony, this is right up your alley. This is an Italian wine.
Okay.
And, you know, one of the things about wines is the story behind them. I mean, the taste, obviously, is one of the things that's attractive about it. But this is an Italian wine. It's a Valpolicella, which is actually a grape, a varietal, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from the territory, northern end of Italy, called Verona, which, you know, there's Romeo and Juliet and all that kind of thing. So it's a kind of a very historical place. So this is the one I'm recommending is a Corte Maggiore 2008 Valpolicella. And this is a different Valpolicella. You know, most of these wines are, you take the grapes, you squeeze them, you know, you let them ferment for a while and you stick them in a bottle. Well, that's the easy way. This one here is also, there's a second process to it. This is a ripasso, R-I-P-A-S-S-O.
Mm-hmm.
Ripasso, I'm not sure if it's literally, but means to repass. So what they do is they take the grape skins after they've squeezed them and they set them aside. And then after the wine has gone through its first fermentation, they actually pour the wine back through the skins. And in doing that, it picks up a little bit more sugar, a little bit more fermentation, and this amazing flavor. It's not sweet, although it sounds like there's a lot of sugar in it, but it's not sweet at all. It's just one of those things that you say, you try to put your finger or your tongue on the flavor, and it's tough to do.
Interesting. Now,
I'm notoriously, although I have tasted lots of wines, I'm just terrible at describing flavors, but it's a semi-typical Italian Valpolicella, which is a kind of a dry wine. It's got notes of maybe some raisins and some plum and that kind of thing. But it's one of those you really have to experience. And as far as price, it's $15, which is just phenomenal.
Okay. Our first guest, Sandor Katz, talked all about fermentation. So this makes this makes a lot of sense. Of course, wine, he mentioned all the alcohol products we talked about. Do you have an online source for your wine, or do you buy at a local shop, or what?
We buy it around here in this area. We have come to know some of the distributors. This one here we actually get from a local distributor. So even if I told you who it was, it wouldn't be any good because he's probably not where you are. But I will tell you one thing I'd like to plug, and it's something called Vivino, V-I-V-I-N-O. It's an app for your phone or for your smartphone or your tablet. I think you can get it online on regular website as well. But it's a great tool because what it does is it allows you to take your phone and take a picture of the label of the bottle, and it automatically scans it. It does all this fancy OCR conversion. And then it looks it up, and it says, 200 people have scanned this wine, and they said it's really good. And they found it at these places to buy, and it should cost you around this amount of money. And then you can put your own tasting notes in it.
So, interesting. Okay.
So it's a good app, and I'm on there. So if somebody does download that, I'm on there. Go ahead and follow me on there as well, and we can share notes about wine. So you need to do that, Tony.
Okay, Vivino. Okay. And we just have about 2 minutes left. You mentioned notes of raisins, and I mean, are you able to taste different things when you are you trained that way? Your tongue can denote these things, these flavors.
Well, as I kind of mentioned, I'm really bad at it. I have a couple friends who are master sommeliers. You know, sommelier is the guy at the restaurant that comes around with a little cup around his neck and tastes the wine and says, you know, if it's good or not. But they actually are, you know, that's part of their training is the expertise of saying, yes, this has, you know, I can taste rust or I can taste pencil lead. Some of the things they come up with are just
oh my goodness,
amazing to me.
I don't know what kind of restaurants you go to. I never had a guy come around with a little cup around his neck.
Really? Okay.
I've had waitresses and waiters hold out their hand for a tip. That's not what this cup is for. You don't put money in it, do you? That's what
we do on
the subway. No. Somebody's holding a cup. You usually put a dollar bill in it. But that's not what you're talking about.
No, I'm not.
No, okay. All right, we have to leave it there. Enophile, which is wine connoisseur, wine expert, and technologist, Scott Kegler, the editor of Nonprofit Technology News at nptechnews.com. Scotty, thank you for talking about volunteers, and thank you for talking about Valpolicella.
Thanks, Tony. Take care.
My pleasure. Claire Meyerhoff, any closing notes for the show?
Just want to say that you do a fantastic job with your radio show. I'm so very impressed with your interviewing skills and your you know knowledge of your subject matter. And
you're over the top. She's an old radio gal. She's
the greatest guy ever.
She's a pro. Used to be at WTOP in Washington, D.C.
I've worked at XM Satellite Radio as a talk show host, all kinds of stuff.
Thanks for being on
and
the
now
show.
I'm here.
Thanks for
Tony
being
Martin
now,
Radio.
And it's all brought you to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio.
It's the culmination.
The pinnacle.
It's the pinnacle. It's the peak.
You've achieved the zenith of your career. Thanks for being with me. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Next week, first half of the show. I'm not sure. It might be the overhead myth. You're familiar with that letter. I'm still trying to get the three co-signers of that letter on the show. It might be next Friday, or if not, then we'll do an interview from Fundraising Day. This past June. Also, Gene Takagi returns, our legal contributor, and he and I are going to continue the discussion on back to board basics. Insert sponsor message. Over 9,000 leaders, fundraisers, and board members of small and mid-sized charities listen each week. So does Claire Meyerhoff with her cracked iPhone. She's taking pictures.
I dropped it on the driveway.
It looks gross. I don't know. It's amazing. They still work.
Still works.
You can contact me on the blog if you want to talk about sponsoring this show. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff.
Ta-da, that's me.
Sam Leibowitz is our line producer. The show's social media is now by Deborah Askenaze of Community Organizer 2.0. Welcome, Deborah. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. I hope you'll be with me next week, Friday 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you a female entrepreneur ready to break through? Join us at Sexy Body, Sassy Soul, where women are empowered to ask for and receive what they truly want in love, life, and business. Tune in Thursdays at noon Eastern Time to learn tips and juicy secrets from inspiring women and men who dare to define their success. Get inspired, stay motivated, and define your version of joy and success with Sexy Body, Sassy Soul, every Thursday at noon New York Time on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern, on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Are you concerned about the future of your business or career? Would you like it all to just be better? Well, the way to do that is through better communication. And the best way to do that is training from the team at Improving Communications. This is Larry Sharp, host of the Ivory Tower Radio Program and director at Improving Communications. Does your office need better leadership, customer service, sales, or maybe better writing or speaking skills? Could they be better at dealing with confrontation, conflicts, and touchy subjects? All are covered here at Improving Communications. If you're in the New York City area, stop by one of our public classes or get your human resources in touch with us. The website is improvingcommunications.com. That's improvingcommunications.com. Improve your professional environment. Be more effective. Be happier and make more money. Improving Communications. That's the answer.
TalkingAlternative.com.